When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The Two-Footed Podcast is brought to you by EPLindex.com and our presenting sponsor, Liberty Shield. Liberty Shield is a VPN provider. A virtual privacy network allows you to go online, change your location, access things you're geo-blocked from, while keeping your data safe. So, as an example, if you are a UK expat and want access to BBC iPlayer to watch Match of the Day, or ITV Hub, or All Four, but you get that message that says this content is not available in your location, a Liberty Shield VPN gets you around that block, allows you to watch whatever you want on those services while also keeping your data safe. And it goes further than that. It allows you to open up Netflix's entire library by just changing your IP address. Liberty Shield is the number one rated VPN provider on Trustpilot with 5-star ratings across the board. So go to libertyshield.com right now, use the code EPL25 and get either the hardware package or the software package. The hardware package is a router that you plug into your existing router, and any item you want to change the IP address on, be it your phone or your television, you connect that to the new Liberty Shield router. All other items can remain connected to your existing router. There's also a software package, which is instantly downloadable to your device and you can get using straight away. Again, libertyshield.com, EPL25 for 25% off at checkout. We're also brought to you by Home of Hopcroft, a giftware and homeware company located in Scotland but shipping worldwide. Check out homeofhopcroft.co.uk and do check out the EPL Index and Anfield Index shops, which you'll find on Etsy. Use the codes EPL10 or RED10 for 10% off at checkout. And lastly, do remember to check out A Tad Predictable, hosted by Tadiwa. That podcast is on this feed before every Premier League match week. And then the EPL Roundtable, hosted by Kevin DeVries, on its own EPL Roundtable feed. So just search EPL Roundtable in your podcast device. And that's out after every match week. Now, on with the show. What's good, boys and girls? Two-Footed Podcast. Today is Wednesday, the 24th of April. I hope you're all well. Nobody is as well as the Arsenal fans today. Arsenal 5, Chelsea 0 in the Premier League. An absolute walloping. Now, Chelsea gave up, but credit to Arsenal, who really put the hammer down. Leandro Trossard put them 1 up on 4 minutes. It's poor goalkeeping. But Trossard gets his shot on target, and that's all you can really ask him to do. On 52 minutes, Ben White makes it 2-0. Short corner, worked well, poorly defended. Ball breaks to White, and he finishes really well. On 57, Kai Havertz scores after an absolutely sensational Martin Odegaard pass. It's an absolutely sensational pass. Should play have been brought back for Gabriel assaulting Noni Madueke? Probably, but it wasn't. The goal counts. Credit to Odegaard. On 65, Havertz would make it 4. And then on 70, Ben White made it 5th with his 2nd. It's definitely a cross that he's mishit. But it goes in, and that's all anyone will care about. But you could tell by the fact he didn't really celebrate it, that he knew himself it was a bit of a mishit skew. Chelsea gave up after the 3rd goal went in. And Nicholas Jackson should have scored twice in the game. Missed two big chances. But that's Nicholas Jackson for you, isn't it? Arsenal were good value for the win. Now, look, Chelsea, it's nothing close to their first 11. You've got no Cole Palmer for a start, not playing last night, huge blow. No Malo Gusto, who's been really good for them this year. Changes at centre-back. That midfield, which just doesn't work. The Enzo Caicedo midfield doesn't work. And at some point, they're just going to have to accept that it doesn't work as currently constituted. And the front four were just a non-factor. Mykhailo Mudryk might be... And I know I said last week I would try and do something with him if I was in charge of Chelsea, purely because of the investment in him. Like, it's not because I think he's a great player, but he does have some great attributes. But the investment in him, you've got to try and make that work. He's got like 7 years left on his contract. You have to try and make it work. What else are you going to do? Like, let's see when his contract is up. I'm almost certain it's 2031 that he's contracted to, which, I mean, it's just such bad management of the club by Chelsea. Yeah, 2031. He's got 7 years left on his contract. How do you get out from underneath that? He's on good money as well. He is only 23, so like, there's still promise there. Because of his pace, like, because he does have that one incredible attribute, but it's going to rise to like 85 million or something, that fee, and he's on probably well in excess of 100 grand a week, probably closer to 150 grand a week. You've got to try and get something out of him, but my God, he's brainless. Like, he is absolutely brainless. It's why you would need to play him as a right winger, not a left winger, and just completely simplify the game for him. Give him two instructions. Knock it past the winger and whip crosses in. That's it. Don't do anything else. Here are the places we want you putting the crosses to. The 12-yard spot, the back post, and pullbacks to the edge of the area. And don't do anything else. Don't try and beat a second man. Don't do anything else. Just knock it past that first man, run as fast as you can, and get the ball into the box. And that's it. But by God, he was awful last night. Absolutely awful. So was Gallagher. So was Enzo. Congrats to Declan Rice for the first time in five meetings. You weren't utterly dog-walked by Moises Caicedo, who also appears to have just given up on the season. But a good win for Arsenal. We have multiple games in the Premier League today. Wolves against Bournemouth should be a good one. The Gary O'Neill derby. Wolves at home, so you would fancy them. This is 11th versus 13th in the Premier League. And if we just check the injury situation ahead of tonight, Bournemouth, no Fredericks, no Tavernier, no Sinisterra, no Romain Favre. Tyler Adams is a doubt, and Chris Metham is out. And for Wolves, I assume no Pedro Neto. Yeah, no Craig Dawson. He's done for the season. Leon Chouani, it's a shame, he's a promising young player. Noel Lamina, he wouldn't be playing anyway. Nelson Semedo's a doubt. Matthias Cunha is a doubt. And Bellegarde is working his way back, but probably not ready for this one. We'll go the draw. We'll just go the draw. A draw would be a good result for both teams, I think. Crystal Palace against the Toon. Palace riding high after their big win at the weekend over Crystal Palace. Obviously, Toon have found some good form of late. Injury-wise, Newcastle ravaged by injuries, as they have been most of the season, because that's what Eddie Howe football, the modern Eddie Howe football does to you. But to be fair, he also had a lot of injury issues when he was at Bournemouth, something that was constantly overlooked. This season, they've just been so unfortunate, though, because you obviously have to factor in the Tonali suspension, which isn't Eddie Howe's fault, but somebody surely had to have done a background check and looked into what this lad was like. and looked into why Milan seemed quite happy to sell when prior to that he'd kind of been made untouchable and was seen as, you know, the long-term future of the club. No Botman, no Lascelles, no Tonali, no Willock, no Miley. They're all done for the season. No Jolington, no Trippier, no Pope, no Almiron. Likely no Target, wouldn't be playing anyway. And Callum Wilson, though, getting closer to a return. So that is a positive. For Palace, no Johnston, no Doucouré, no Lerman, no Guehi, no Holding, and no Matthias Franke. So both sides missing a lot of players, but Elise and Eze are playing really well. I'm going to back Palace to win 2-1. Manchester United versus Sheffield United. United, obviously, winner at the weekend in the FA Cup, though they won't feel much like winners given how the game played out. Seventh in the league. Sheffield United nailed to the foot of the league. United have had injuries this season. They have no Malacia, no Martial, no Shaw, no Martinez, no Lindelof, no Varane, no Mount. He's missed a lot of games, hasn't he? Doubts over Garnacho and Rashford. Major doubts over McTominay and Rashford. Doubts over Bruno and Garnacho. Kambwala also a major doubt, as is Johnny Evans. They might be very, very short at centre-back come tonight. Might be Scott McTominay at centre-back if he's past fit, which it doesn't look like he will be. It could be very interesting to see what Team United put out tonight. Sheffield United, though, they've been decimated all season with injuries. Again, particularly in their defensive line, which has been a big issue. No Max Lowe, no Norrington Davies, no Basham, no Egan, no Jebison, no Baldock, no Davies. Very little chance of Jack Robinson. McBurney, Hammer and Brewster all set for fitness tests. I'm just going to pick United to win 3-1. Sheffield United give up far too many goals. I think United will punish them. I could see Hoyland getting a couple of goals in that one. And then the final game is the Merseyside Derby. These games, Wolves, Bournemouth is 7:45. The other three are at 8. Liverpool, Everton. Liverpool second, need to win to keep pace with Arsenal. Everton 16th. They've won 2 of the last 3. They've got 3 winnable games coming up. I think this might be one where Everton aren't as intense as they normally would be. No Patterson, no Dele Alli, no Beto. Calvert-Lewin is a doubt. Coleman is out and Dobbin is out. Liverpool, no Jota and no Bradley. Their blows, Bradley wouldn't be starting, but Jota probably would. No Alcantara, no Matip, obviously. I'm just picking Liverpool to win 2-0, to be honest. There's no real logic behind it other than they're a much better team than the Ev, and they need to win this game, so we'll go 2-0. Also, last night in the Skybet Championship, we had an absolute walloping. A game that I thought was going to be pretty close and turned out to not be close at all. Leicester 5, Southampton 0. Abdul Fatawa scored a hat-trick, Wilfred Ndidi scored, and Jamie Vardy scored. That game was fairly close up until the hour mark, and then Leicester just annihilated them. Absolutely annihilated them. Really good performance and a huge win. It puts Leicester 4 points clear of Leeds, 5 points clear of Ipswich. Ipswich have a game in hand. That game is the 30th of April away to Coventry. But yeah, I mean, that's the end of Southampton's hopes of automatic promotion. They can now settle into a playoff berth where they will play one of West Brom or Norwich. Ipswich can still go up, obviously, automatically, which would mean that we get Kieran McKenna securing automatic promotion back-to-back years, which would be great. I think that's I think Leicester and Ipswich is what I probably lean to right now. Just if we look at Leeds, who they've got left. They've got QPR away and Southampton home. Now, they should win both, to be fair. Ipswich, Hull away, Coventry away, Huddersfield home. That's a tougher run, actually. Really is a tougher run. Big news for Leicester, though, is like one more win and they're safe. One more win and they're promoted automatically. They've got Preston away and Blackburn home. They should actually win both of them, which means they'll lose one and win one. In League One last night, we had two games. Cambridge won, Wickham won, and Cheltenham 2, Peterborough 0. Now, both of those games obviously meant something at the bottom of the table. Cambridge's win means they should be okay, but they still need one more point. They still need one more point. Burton and Cheltenham are battling to stay in the division. Fleetwood are gone, Port Vale are gone, Carlisle are gone. It comes down to Cambridge, Burton and Cheltenham. One of them must go down in the final game of the season. Cheltenham are away to Stevenage, who are ninth and out of the running for anything. Burton are away to Fleetwood, who are already down. And Cambridge are away to Port Vale, who are already down. So all three teams should win, which would send Cheltenham down, which, you know, they had such a rotten start to the season that it's not surprising. In League Two, we had two games last night. Barrow 1, Bradford 2. Barrow just collapsing at the wrong time. And Colchester 1, Doncaster 4. So Colchester still at risk of relegation, but a point in their final game will see them stay safe. They're home to Crewe. Now, Crewe are sixth, should be safe in the playoffs, but won't want to take any risks. So they'll be going out to win that game. A draw is enough for both teams, but Colchester shouldn't expect any favours. Sutton, who are the team that could jump them, they're away to MK Dons, who are locked into fourth. So MK Dons potentially might punt on that game, so it could give Sutton a glimmer. Doncaster, 7 wins in a row now. They have jumped up to fifth. Crewe are sixth, and Barrow are seventh, which is the final playoff spot. But I think they've lost 5 of 6. They're in terrible form. It's down to them, Crawley, and Bradford potentially for that last spot. If Barrow and Crawley both lose, Bradford could jump them. Barrow are home to Mansfield, who've already locked up promotion. Crawley are home to Grimsby, who are dreadful. So Crawley should win. And Bradford are home to Newport, who are in terrible form. So they should win. So Barrow, it's really looking like they're going to miss out after what had been such a good campaign through the first 35 games or so. Let's see if I can pull up their results. Let's see. What's the current run of form? Yeah, they've lost 5 of 6. Prior to that, they'd only lost 8 games all season. And they'd won 4 of their previous 6 with 2 draws. They were on a really good run. And then they lost to Morecambe, lost to Swindon, lost to Gillingham, lost to drew at Crawley, lost to Doncaster, lost to Bradford, and now play Mansfield, needing the win to get promoted, to get into the playoffs. Doncaster's run, though, they've come from nowhere. They've come from absolutely nowhere. Match day 36, Doncaster were 20th in the division. 20th. Now, at that point, they'd actually only played 35 games. But they have now, they've actually won, I was doing them a disservice, they've won 10 in a row. They've won 10 in a row. It's an absolutely incredible run. They've been really poor. They lost 4 of their first 5, 5 of their first 7, didn't win any of their first 7, and were bottom of the league after 7 games. Bottom of the league. Then they won 2, lost 1, 1-1, lost 1, 1-2, lost 1, 1-1, lost 2, 1-1, drew 1, lost 3, drew 1, 1-1, lost 3, drew 1. That's about, what's that now? That's 30 games. 29 games. First 29 games, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. They won 8. First 29 games, they won 8. And in the 16 games since, they've won 13 with only 1 defeat and 2 draws. That is an incredible turnaround. To win 10 in a row with Gillingham away in the final game. Now, Gillingham are 11th. Their season is over. They've got nothing to play for. And if Doncaster win that, they'll go into the playoffs, I think, as the favourites. Even though MK Dons have been the better team all season. Doncaster, if they win 11 in a row going into the playoffs, they'd have to be seen as favourites. Grant McCann is the manager there, and he started off with Peterborough, began well. I think he was there 18 months. He got sacked after a poor run, took over at Doncaster, led them to the playoffs, lost out in the semi-final, went to Hull, did a really good job at Hull, got them promoted from League One into the Championship, got sacked because the owners decided that they didn't want to stick with him because they'd had a bad run, went back to Peterborough, didn't do well, but they were already going down. It was a bizarre decision for him to go there at that time, because they were definitely on a slide back into League One, because they'd come up as well. He stayed on, got sacked, went back to Doncaster, looked like he was going to get sacked early this season. Like, he really did. And that first 29 games is dreadful. 16 defeats in there. 8 wins and 16 defeats. 5 draws. And then since then, they've just been completely turned around. They've been unbelievable. Madness. Right. We'll go to break. We'll be back after this. Right. Welcome back. So what we're going to do now is, it is Nostalgia Day, obviously, on a Wednesday. So we're going to take a look at Bobby Robson and his time at Ipswich Town. So worth noting that Bobby Robson had a pretty stellar playing career with Fulham and with West Brom, had moved to Canada, become player coach, player manager at Vancouver Royal Canadiens, had come back to England and worked very briefly with Fulham. They decided he wasn't the guy for them. They sacked him and he moved on to Ipswich Town in 1969. Ipswich had won the First Division title, which we now call the Premier League, in 1962, having only been promoted to the top flight in 61. They had been not a strong club prior to that, let's put it that way. They were the equivalent of non-league from their creation in 1978 all the way through until 1946. They had never been in the top flight until they came up in 1961 and won the league at their very first attempt, which is ridiculous. So ridiculous that 2 years later, they were relegated. They spent 4 years in what we now call the Championship, Division 2, and then they were promoted. And then Bobby Robson arrives in 1969. They finish 18th in his first year. He doesn't manage the full season. They finish 18th. The next year, they finish 9th. Then they go 13th. And then he turns things around massively. And it's 4th, 4th, 3rd, 6th, and 3rd. Which is quite an incredible run in terms of consistency. I know, again, that they'd won a title, but that was the only time. The year they won the league was the only time they'd finished in the top half, in the top flight. They finished 1st, then 17th, then 22nd. Came up 12th, 18th, 19th, 13th. They'd never finished in the top half other than that one title win. And he rattles off 5 top 6 finishes in a row. In 1978, they won the FA Cup. They beat Arsenal in the final. They beat Cardiff 2-0 in the third round. Hartlepool 4-1 in the fourth round. Needed a replay to beat Bristol 3-0 in the fifth round. Hammered Millwall 6-1 in the sixth round. Beat Robson's former club that he played for, West Brom, 3-1 in the semi-final. And made their way out at Wembley in front of 100,000 people against an Arsenal team with Pat Jennings in goals, Pat Rice, a young David O'Leary, young Liam Brady, Frank Stapleton, Malcolm McDonald, Alan Hudson, Alan Sunderland. A very, very strong Arsenal team under Terry Neill. And this Ipswich team was not star names. A couple would become star names. You had Paul Cooper, George Burley, who most people remember as a manager, Mick Mills, Alan Hunter, and Kevin Beattie was the defence. Brian Talbot was the defensive midfielder. Roger Osborne on the right. John Wark on the left of the three midfielders. Paul Mariner, David Geddes, and Clive Woods as the attack. And Osborne would score in the 77th minute. He was about to be taken off. And he scores the only goal of the game. Comes off a minute later. Mick Lambert comes on. And Ipswich hang on and manage to win the FA Cup. The second bit of major silverware in club history. We're not counting League 2 and League 3, or Division 2 and Division 3 trophies here. But they had, to be fair to them, they had won 2 Division 2 titles and 2 Division 3 titles. They'd also won the Southern League in 1937, if you want to include that. But this was the first real silverware since the league title in 62. That team, like, the two standout players there are John Wark and Paul Mariner. Mariner would move on to Arsenal after a very successful 8-year run. Didn't have success at Arsenal. Had probably stayed at Ipswich a little bit too long. Wark went to Liverpool the same year, 84. Had 4 years there. Not the same level of success, but did win a bunch of medals. And went back to Ipswich, then Middlesbrough. And then had a really good run with Ipswich in his late 30s in the Premier League era, in from 91 to 97. But that win was enormous. That's one of the great upsets in FA Cup final history. We move on. More disappointment then the following year. They finished 6th in the league, quarterfinal of the FA Cup, second round of the League Cup. They do get to the quarterfinal of the Cup Winners' Cup that year, though. And that's a really exciting run for a club like Ipswich, who, like, let's be fair, Europe was not something they were considering. In the European Cup run that they'd had, having won the league title in 1962, they played the European Cup in 62-63, and they went out in the first round. You know, they didn't even lay a glove on Milan in the first leg. They lost 3-0. Second leg, they gave them a good game. They beat them 2-1 at Portman Road. But Milan were comfortable from that first leg. So Cup Winners Cup of 78-79. In the first round, they play AZ Alkmaar and beat them 2-0 on aggregate. In the first leg, sorry, in the second round then, they played Innsbruck of Austria, beat them 1-0 at home, drew 1-1 away, through they go. On to the quarterfinals, they play mighty Barcelona. They beat them 2-1 at home, they lose 1-0 away, and they go out on away goals. But what a great run for them, like, to get to the Nou Camp, to go into that game with a lead and only go out and away goals. It's a hell of an achievement, really. Barcelona would go on and win the competition that year, beating Fortuna Dusseldorf in the final. Had Ipswich gotten through, they would have played Bavarian in the semis. They would have been heavy favourites to win that, and that would have put them in the final against Fortuna Dusseldorf, and potentially they pull out the win there. They'd had UEFA Cup runs. They'd never done all that well. They got to the quarterfinal once, but generally round one, round two, round three, nothing to shout home about. But this run in the 78-79 Cup Winners' Cup really emboldened them. And the next year they finished third in the league, got to the quarterfinal of the cup, and then in the UEFA Cup finished, got to the second round, were knocked out. But it started something. So we go into 1980-81. Robson's now been there well over a decade. He's crafted this team to what he wants it to be. He's had some success. He wants more. And 80-81 might be the best season in club history. Again, I know they won a league title, but this year they finished second. They played 36 games all season. Sorry, 66 games all season. They won 37. Drew 13, lost 16. They finished second in the league. They finished 4 points behind Aston Villa. They'd had an unbelievably good start to the season. They were, frankly, looking like they'd be runaway champions by mid-March. And then they started to stumble in the league because their focus was split. They lost away to Man United, lost away to Leeds, lost to West Brom, lost at home to Arsenal, lost away to Norwich, lost away to Middlesbrough, and lost at home to Southampton. That was seven defeats. They only lost nine all year. So when they beat Spurs 3-0 on the 14th of March, they were clear at the top. They'd only lost twice all season. They just won six in a row. They looked like they were potentially going to win a treble. The League Cup, they'd gone out in round four, but in the FA Cup, they got all the way to the semi-final. They knocked out Aston Villa, who would win the league that year. They beat Shrewsbury after a replay. They beat Charlton. They beat Nottingham Forest after a replay. And unfortunately, those games just wore them down. And they lost the semi-final to Manchester City. And City would go on and lose the final to Tottenham. In the UEFA Cup, though, which is where the focus had been, which is why they kind of slipped away in their pursuit of everything else, they managed to go on and win the competition, which, for Ipswich Town to win the UEFA Cup at that time, is pretty incredible. Now, if we look at their run, they beat Salonika 5-1 at home in the first leg, lose 3-1 in the second leg, but they had it wrapped up. They beat Bohemians of Prague 3-0 at home in the first leg of the second round, lose 2-0 away, becoming a bit of a habit that. Beat Widzew Lodz 5-0 at home, lose 1-0 away. Then they play St. Etienne, and that is a St. Etienne team that at that point would have been very, very familiar and would have been seen as probably the favourites going into the game. Michel Platini was in that St Etienne team. And yet, Ipswich wiped the floor with them. 4-1 win away, 3-1 win at home, put themselves through to a semi-final against Cologne. John Wark scored the only goal in the home game. Terry Butcher, who would obviously go on and have quite a good career, scored the winner in the away game. They go through 2-0 on aggregate. And then they get to the final. They play AZ Alkmaar. They play the first leg at home and they win 3-0. They play the second leg away. They lose 4-2, but they win 5-4 on aggregate to secure European silverware for Ipswich Town. And you look at that squad. You've got Paul Cooper, the goalkeeper, played 61 games that season. Laurie Civil was the backup goalkeeper. He played 5. In defence, George Burley played 34 games. Alan Hunter played 1. Mick Mills played 54. Russell Osman played 66. He played in every game. Tommy Parkin played 2. Kevin Steagles played 8. Terry Butcher played 64 games, and George Burley, I think you said that, he played 34. The midfield, Arnold Muren, outstanding player, played 65 games. Kevin O'Callaghan played 35 in total, only 12 starts though. Roger Osborne played 1. Frank Tyson, another Dutch player, outstanding footballer in midfield, he played 52. John Wark played 64. And then in the attack, you've still got Paul Mariner. He played 58 games. You've got Eric Gates. He played 60. Robin Turner played 5, only 2, 3 as a starter. Mitch Davery, I don't remember him at all. He played 6 games, 2 as a starter. And Alan Brazil, who most people now just know as that annoying idiot off the TV, but was an absolutely fantastic player under Robson. He'd nicked him from Celtic. He did a tremendous run there. He was never the same after Ipswich. It was the same for a lot of these players. Ipswich really was the highlight of most of their careers. But when you look at some of the names in that team, like, it's very, very well put together, and it's a very attack-minded footballing side. You know, like that midfield, John Wark was an absolute machine in those Ipswich teams. And when you look at his career statistics, at this point, in 76-77, he scores 10 goals. The next season, 7, then 9, then 15. This season, this 80-81 season, he scores 36 goals from midfield. Then 23-23-11, moves mid-season to Liverpool. His first full season at Liverpool, he plays in 62 games, scores 27 goals. After that, he was plagued by injuries and he wasn't the same player. But this run with Ipswich, he was just phenomenal. 36 goals from midfield. Like, people always big up Lampard and what he did. John Wark was doing that 20 plus years before him. And this season in particular, he was just incredible. Absolutely incredible. Brazil got 18 goals. Mariner got 26. Eric Gates got 14. Muren got 8. And Tyson got 6, including some big ones in both legs of the final. Arnold Muren had come through at Volendam, moved to Ajax, went to Twente, won 23 caps for the Netherlands, joined Ipswich, played for Ipswich for 4 years, 161 appearances, 21 goals. But as a fella in midfield that could ping the ball about and control a game, he was one of the very best of that era. Would move on to Manchester United and then go back to Ajax and finish out his career there. Currently works for Ajax as a youth coach. Tyson played for NEC, then Twente. He arrived a year after Muren at Ipswich, who'd also joined from Twente. He stayed a year longer. So he left in 83, whereas Murin left in 82, went on to Nottingham Forest, was plagued by injuries, had hit 30 and was kind of on the downside, went to Vancouver Whitecaps for a year and then finished off his career playing in the Netherlands for 7 years for three different clubs. He won 14 caps in his career. But all of these players moved to Ipswich and thrived for Ipswich because of Bobby Robson, because of how he set the team up. Like, at the time, his 4-3-3 was different to what other managers were doing. At the time, he wanted to play a Dutch brand of football. He was fascinated by the idea of total football and what Rinus Michels was preaching. And that's why he went and he signed the two Dutch players. It's why we see a player like John Wark scoring so many goals from midfield, because there was a fluidity to how they played. And if you can find footage of that Ipswich team, genuinely, they were so much fun to watch. They were one of the most entertaining teams in England from probably about 75 through to 82 when he left. In his final season there, which was the 81-82 season, Ipswich finished second again, got to the fifth round of the FA Cup, the semi-finals of the League Cup, and were knocked out of the UEFA Cup, unfortunately, in round one. But still, finishing second, a really, really good season for them. Alan Brazil will have 28 goals in that season. John Wark then bounced back as top scorer the following year. But, like, we just don't see teams like this as much anymore. Leicester, obviously, winning the league title, really, really impressive, but they didn't really do anything in Europe, and they didn't sustain a run at the top as long. The Ipswich were third, second, and second. In a 10-year run from 72 to 82 when he left, they finished 18th the year they won the FA Cup. And outside of that, they never finished outside the top six. And they were in the top four, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 times. 2 6th place finishes and that one in 18th when they won the FA Cup. They didn't get the silver, as much silverware as they should have, only the two trophies, but still a major European trophy and an FA Cup back when the FA Cup really mattered. And when people talk about Bobby Robson, a lot of them talk about Newcastle or they talk about England, but it was at Ipswich that he really did his best work. And obviously he had great success with PSV Eindhoven. He was at Sporting, he was at Porto, he was at Barcelona, he was back at Eindhoven. And he won trophies, you know, like at PSV, he wins two Eredivisie titles. With Porto, he wins two league titles there. He wins the Copa del Rey and the Cup Winners' Cup at Barcelona. But people always overlook what an amazing job he did with Ipswich Town. When we look at Ipswich and what they've done since, they got relegated in 1986. They'd finished 9th, 12th, 17th and 20th in the four seasons after he left and were relegated. They were in Division 2 then for 6 years before finally getting promoted in 92. They lasted 3 years in the Premier League, but never finished above 16th. Dropped back down for 5 years, finally got promoted through the playoffs, finished fifth in their first season in 2000-2001. That was under George Burley, who was a complete disciple of Robson. They finished 18th the next year. That was 2001-2002. And we haven't seen them in the Premier League since. They dropped into what we now call the Championship. It was Division 1 at the time. Finished 7th, 5th, 3rd. And it looked like just a matter of time before they'd be promoted again. And then they just fell off a cliff. 15th, 14th, 8th, 9th, 15th, 13th, 15th, 14th, 9th. Then 6th. And it looked like maybe they turned it around. 7th, 12th, 16th, 12th. And then bottom and relegated into League One, the third tier. And it took them 4 years to get back out. Kieran McKenna bringing them up. And now they might get promoted back to the Premier League for the first time in over 20 years because of Kieran McKenna. But like, they've never been able to sustain anything like they did under Robson. And part of that is that the game has changed. I appreciate that. But part of it is they just haven't had a genius like him. And Bobby Robson was a genius. And it's often overlooked what a great manager he was, because he's always been that really nice guy, but he was a really, really special manager and one that should always be remembered. Back after the break. Right, welcome back. So, former Manchester City and Manchester United forward Carlos Tevez is currently in hospital having experienced chest pains. The 40-year-old is the current head coach of Independiente. Doctors say his condition is satisfactory and that initial tests have come up clean, but he will be kept in as a precaution. There's a really good piece on the BBC website on Brian Clough. Much of it is stuff that has been told by different players over the years, especially Mark Crossley. So do check that out. I think Crossley is the source of most of that stuff. There's a piece on Ruben Amorim written by Guillaume Balagher, which is good, but it's Guillaume Balagher, so we won't praise it too much. Ralph Rangnick says he has been contacted by Bayern Munich about becoming an ex-manager. Hard to know if that's actually true or not, because Rangnick likes to talk himself up. In grim news, two Premier League players have been arrested over an alleged rape. Two 19-year-olds who play for the same club. We'll wait and see if more comes out about that. Pep Guardiola says he's never had any doubts over referee integrity. I mean, that's just comical, really, isn't it? Absolutely comical. There is a piece here that claims that tremendous Kai Havertz is no longer Arteta's vanity project, because he scored the third and fourth goals in a league win over Chelsea. Really? I mean, if we look at the entire season, he has not been a good buy, and that money could have been much better spent. He hasn't worked out as a number eight, which is what he was bought to be. Yes, he's got, I think, 11 goals in the Premier League, 12 in all competitions, but it's not exactly blowing the doors off, and half those games have come in the front line. So, I don't know. It's Phil McNulty, so you wouldn't expect much more. On to the gossip then. Arsenal and Manchester City are both considering a summer move for Bruno Guimaraes. I don't believe Arsenal have that money. It's a 100 million buyout. I don't believe Arsenal have that money. Real Madrid and PSG are also interested in Guimaraes. I could see him going to PSG. I don't think Real will pay. Liverpool will have to pay fine or 9 million euro in compensation. That is incorrect. It's more like 15 million euro. Portugal midfielder Bernardo Silva has decided to leave Manchester City and is keen to make the switch to Barcelona. That's from Sport, which is a Barcelona fanzine. Chelsea are inquiring about RB Leipzig and France centre-back Castillo Luqueba, who has a release clause of 60 million. Well, the signings they've made from Leipzig thus far have not worked out, so, you know, why not go back for it? Manchester United are at least 13 million apart from Newcastle in their attempts to agree a compensation deal. That is incredible. How much do they want from? Now, they're right to hold out, but how much do they want from? How much are United offering? Chelsea defender Thiago Silva has reached a verbal agreement with Fluminense to join at the end of the season. Robin van Persie is close to taking up his first managerial post after holding talks with Heerenveen. Now, if Arnie Slot leaves Feyenoord, I'd imagine he'd be in the running for that job. Real Madrid plan to extend the contract of Lucas Vazquez, whose current deal runs out in the summer. Makes sense. He's been there years. He can play anywhere. He never complains. He's won everything. 3 league titles, 4 Champions Leagues, 3 European Super Cups, 3 World Club Cups. Yeah, you might as well keep hold of him. I don't doubt his wages are breaking the bank there. PSG are in pursuit of Lamine Yamal. Barca won't let him go. Manchester United are interested in Alessandro Bastoni and are prepared to offer 52 million. What are they going to buy? His boots? Maybe one half of him? Feyenoord are interested in Brian Hill. Olivier Giroud will sign a contract with LAFC and will join them on a free transfer when his AC Milan deal comes to an end this summer. Manchester United are interested in 17-year-old Norwegian midfielder Sverre Nypan, who is impressed at Rosenborg. Bayern Munich are set to reignite their interest in Frankie de Jong, yada yada. AC Milan senior advisor Zlatan Ibrahimovic has told club owners to appoint Antwerp boss Mark van Bommel as their new manager. Mark van Bommel is an awful manager. Like, he did a genuinely abysmal job at Wolfsburg. And I understand he won the league with Antwerp last year. But that's not a high level. Not a high level at all. Like, he was sacked by PSV, having failed miserably there. And he was sacked by Wolfsburg, having only managed 13 games. How he managed to string out the playing career he had, I've no idea. Like, how did he spend a year at Barcelona, 5 years at Milan, 5 years at Bayern, and 2 years at AC Milan, when Milan were, you know, relevant? Absolute insanity. And when he joined, he was 29 when he went to, 28, sorry, when he went to Barca. He played for Fortuna Sittard and PSV. Had nearly 450 games under his belt, or 400 games under his belt. Was a run-of-the-mill Eredivisie midfielder, and somehow managed to have a great late career. Somehow won 79 caps for his national team. Bang average. He's a poor manager. But he's got friends in the right places by the sounds of it. Right, folks, that's me for today. See you tomorrow. Bye-bye.
Podcast Network.